Tell me about some of the items you made. One of the things you mentioned was camp ovens over the years.
Yes, well, the camp oven business started off at the Grey Street Foundry, which was just renamed as E&G Foundry. And the amount of work we had in the foundry at the time was enormous, and we didn't want really any more work, especially camp ovens, because camp ovens are what we call in our game a kitchen line, and they're 2.5% or was 2.5% sales tax on them, which meant you had to make sales tax forms out and all that sort of stuff, which I wasn't very happy about doing. Anything for the taxation department used to get up my nose, I don't know why, but it used to. And so I was never ever tackled anything like that. But this guy from Wellington Surplus Stores in Perth came down one day with this particular size camp oven, which was I think a 5 litre, and he said to me, "Would you be interested in these?" I said, "No." I said, "It's not my line of work really, and they've got to be a fussy casting." I said, "Because people cook in it." And I said, "Not only that, there's this sales tax you've got to fiddle around with." "Oh no," I said, "I don't want anything to do with it." So he said, "Oh well, can I leave it there and let you think about it?" So he put it down by the office door. Well, every time I went in to answer the phone, I'd look at this camp oven. Anyway, one day I was on the way home and I said, "Oh, take this thing home." Well, in my den I've got a bench where I used to, for night time, I used to fix up patents for the next day, and I used to do check invoices in there. It's quite a nice den. It's got a shower and a toilet and a wash basin. It's got a fridge in it, and it's got a potbelly stove, and it's got a radio, and it's got TV. So it's really, you know, another part of the house. And my beloved boat's alongside all this, so it's a nice little spot. So I took this thing home and I threw it on my bench, and sitting there doing some invoices and having a look at this thing, and all of a sudden it started to click to me an easy method of making them. So I wrote down what I had in mind, and then I passed it for a few days, and then I had another look at it another time. I said, "Oh, I'd make this in a three-part method with three-part boxes." And then I thought, "Oh, well, I haven't got those sort of boxes, I'll have to make them." And then there was all sorts of things that started to creep into it. And I thought, "Well, wouldn't be bad to make a few just for friends." Because the demand was, from what he told me, was enormous. In the meantime, where he used to get them made, the foundry, Scandia foundry, had gone broke. And that was the place that they wanted me to manage, which I think I've mentioned in the tapes. Well, they turned out a pretty fair casting on camp ovens. How they did that, I don't know, because their other work was shocking. I wouldn't have even let it got out the door if I'd have been there, but their camp ovens were not too bad. Anyway, I said, "Oh, well, I'll have a go at it." So I arranged with the chap who was one of my top moulders at the time to come in on the Saturday, and I said, "Well, you make the easy part, which is the lid, and I'll make the body part, which is the hardest." So he said, "Okay." So in he came, and by dinner time we had made the patterns and cast them in aluminium, ready for me to file up and fit together to put into boxes. So I took it home and I doctored it up where it needed, which wasn't much, but the castings came out very, very neat, and we made that into an aluminium pattern for three-part work. Then I had some boxes I bought from a foundry, another foundry that went broke around the corner from where the foundry was. I just can't think of the name at the moment. And they had these machine boxes, and they'd hardly ever used them, so I went around and put a price on them. And just at that time, when the camp ovens were ready to be made, these boxes loomed up, and they were just a shot for these campers. And I got about 50 of them. So anyway, I made a couple of the next cast. I made a couple of prototype, and they look good. Look better than the ones that have been made by Scandia, to be honest. And I think they were using synthetic sand on them, but I used the green sand method, what we call the facing sand, which I've mentioned over the tapes. And we used the facing sand as a facing against the casting, and then backed it up with the normal heap sands. And we made about, I think there was three or four we made, and they came out quite good. So I rang the guy up and I said, "Look, I've made a couple of camp ovens." "Oh," he said, "you beauty." I said, "Would you like to have a look at them?" And he said, "Yes." He said, "I won't be long." "Well, I guarantee you, I wouldn't have had the phone on the hook 5 minutes," and he was in the foundry. And he came all the way from Perth. He must have been travelling at that particular time. Well, when he saw it, he was bowing and scraping and clapping his hands and jumping up and down. I never seen anybody so excited. And I couldn't see anything to be excited about when I told him the price. That shook him. Oh, he said, "I only paid so." I said, "I don't care what you paid the others. That's what I want." And I think it was $12.50, I think. And it was around about that price, $12.50 to $13. And he was buying them for about $10.50. Okay. All right, he said. Well, he said, "A deal's a deal. Here's an order." And he placed an order in my hands there and then for 50. And I said, "Now look, you can't have all these in one hit." And he said, "Well, what about the handles for them?" And I said, "Well, do they have to have a handle?" He said, yeah, "you've got to have a handle on them." He said, "We can sell some without a handle." Well, that meant another thing we had to work out some way of making handles. I went to the blacksmith and he wanted a too big a price for them, and it just wouldn't work out. So we designed our own gear, and I've always been pretty good with jigs, so with the dresser and myself, it was a pretty bright lad, we nutted out a way of bending 5/16 round a couple of jigs, and we could make these handles for like a piece of cake out of 5/16 bright. We used to use 5/16 bright steel. And so when he got his first lot of camp ovens, he was only about 10 or 15, and within a week he was ringing up for the balance of the order. Well, that started something really off, I tell you. And we finished up making from 3 litre up to 10 litre in camp ovens. We had to get some of the patterns made, but a lot of we used the old cast iron ones, and I doctored them up and made them into patterns and then made the aluminium patterns off those. This was a gift that Wilbur Furphy had taught me, how to make plates, which over the years in the foundry game was absolutely invaluable. And you'd be surprised how many molders in the trade can't make a plate. They wouldn't know where to start. So that was one good thing Wilbur taught me. So we made all these plates, and then he got saturated. He had enough, and he said to me, "Well," he said, "I've got enough now for a while now. If you want to make them for someone else, that's okay by me." So I said to him, "Right." So I didn't bother too much about selling them because we were flat out with agricultural work and shipping, and I was doing a terrific amount of work for the state engineering, making manhole frames and covers and excuse me, and also we were making, I was doing all their bronze work, or three quarters of it at that stage. So we were flat out, and we just made a few camp ovens each cast, and in the finish we had about 50 or 60 camp ovens up there on the floor. So I rang him up and said, "I've got a heap of ovens here, do you want them?" And he says, "No," he said, "they've slowed down a bit." So I said, "Oh, okay." So I thought, "Oh, well, I'll just ring around a bit and see if there's any sales." And I didn't have to ring far, I just rang one, City Disposals, I think her name was. And he said, "Boy, I'll take a lot." So he took all I had. And he didn't know they'd been made in the West. He thought they were made in the East, and he couldn't find out where. So So he said, well, he said, I'll take the lot of these. So, okay, down he came, bundled them in his ute, and away he went. And he was quite happy. And he was just around the corner from Wellington Surplus Stores too. That was the amazing part. He said, I'd seen them in there. He said, he wouldn't tell me where he got them. So I said, well, he must have been hoping that I couldn't find you. And he said, yes, well, that snowballed from there. They started going up north, even to the eastern states. They went to the eastern states. We used to pack them up in 44-gallon drums with sawdust in it or paper, just to, you know, save the shock of the handling. And we used to send over 5 litre, 6 litre, 10 litre, some 3 litres. And it started to become a little bit too much, you know, too much business in the one line. And I've always been the type of guy that you'd never, ever keep your all your eggs in the one basket. You've got to spread your work out, because all of a sudden, out of the blue, one line can disappear. And I've seen it happen in other families, and I've never allowed my family to get to that stage. So anyway, I was battling to keep up the supplies. It was a big job. Anyway, all of a sudden, the sales dropped off. And I couldn't understand why. So I rang this guy at Wellington Surplus Stores, who I'd started off with, and I said, your sales have dropped off and so has everybody else's. Yes, he said, we're getting them from Taiwan now. Oh, I said, are you? He said, yes, he said, they're about a quarter of the price. I said, yeah, I know. They would be. I said, but they'd be rubbish. Oh, no, he said, they're beautiful castings. He said, they're as good as yours. He said, if not a bit better. Do you mind sending me one down? He says, no. So he sent me one down, and the casting finish was very good. Couldn't knock it. All made in synthetic sand. And but I broke it up to see what sort of metal was in it, and they're only about an eighth of an inch thick. Now, straight away I said to the moulders, we were looking at it, I said, these won't last long. I reckon you put them in a good fire, they'd crack in halves. And they said, you reckon? I said, yep, this metal is only rubbish. So I got him to bring another one down. And I made a fire in the foundry, on the side of the foundry there. It intrigued me to think that a country like Taiwan was coming in, bringing in things like that. So I lit this fire and I gave it a good heating up. Bang! Split into two complete halves. So, I realised then that this cheapie was going to get into trouble somewhere along the line, and all I had to do was sit on the fence. And we had that much work, so the camp owners didn't mean anything. But they were still selling, but not in the quantities. And actually, the sales that dropped off suited us, because we were so busy with other work. Anyway, probably about 6 months went past, 8 months, I don't know the time. Time doesn't mean much to me. And all of a sudden an order comes through from Wellington Surplus Stores for 50 camp ovens. So I rang him up and I said, I've received your order this morning. Yes, he said, can you give me a quick delivery on them? I said, I don't know about a quick delivery, but I'll give you a fairly good delivery. Why all of a sudden are we getting these orders? Well, he said, you were right, they're rubbish. Oh, they're split in halves? Yes, he said. You know, he said, I've got that many back here in the bin, split in halves. He said, you wouldn't believe it. He said, I'm supplying your camp ovens to the people in place of these crook ones, and I'm on the losing end. As well as serve you right for going out of Australia to buy stuff. So he said, I've learned a lesson here. So I said, yes. I said, a big one, I hope. So he only used to buy these camp ovens for people who wanted a cheapie, but he used to say to them, this is the top brand made in West Australia. It's dearer, it's thicker, it's made of the right quality iron, grade 14, I told him what to tell him, grade 14 iron, and we've never ever had one return. But these come out, I'll show you. And he used to take them out and show them this box full of crookies. Well, it wasn't good for the Taiwanese, I tell you. So they didn't wake up. They had to thicken them up. All they had to do was thicken them up and improved their grade of iron, and they would have had the market. But no, they didn't do that. So we went merrily on our way, and the sales went up, and all those up north wouldn't have one of those Taiwanese things. They had to have an E&G foundry, and we had E&G foundry on the top of each lid, so that they knew where we were and the phone number and all. And so they were branded. Anyway, one day the phone rings, and I remember I was making some big slabs of bronze for the state engineering, and I was up to my eyes in it. And the phone rang, and this, now I don't know if I got the right department. It could be the Department of Interior. I'm not too sure now. Anyway, this guy was from a government department. And he said, Mr. Hickling. Yes. I'm Mr. So-and-so. Yes. I didn't know what his name was. I can't remember his name now. He said, we've got one of your camp ovens. As a matter of fact, we've got two or three of your camp ovens. We bought them from one of the surplus stores. And we've got them in the window showing in, oh, I don't know, one of the streets in Perth. I said, oh, yeah. I said, what are you doing with these camp ovens? He said, well, he said, we're promoting West Australian-made goods. He said, and from all accounts, this is the best camp oven in Australia. I said, yep, it is. I said, haven't you got a Taiwanese one there? And he said, oh, no. He said, that's a bad language, Taiwanese one. He said, we don't have those in the window. I said, oh. But he said, I want to know if you'd be interested in orders from Japan. Well, he shook me a bit. I said, Japan? What would they use them for? He said, well, there's a demand there. I said, what sort of orders? Oh, he said, they wouldn't be very big. I said, no. He said, oh, about 10,000 orders at a time. I said, 10,000? I said, oh, come on, mate. I said, well, it was maybe 100, but not 10,000. He said, well, that's what the orders would be. I said, is that official? He said, oh, yes. He said, look, I said, I'll have to look into this one, because I said, to take on a project like that, and I'm just about due to retire, a couple of years, 3 years away, and I'd have to spend a lot of money to put all this together. I'd better have a look at it before I get back to you. Give me your name, give me your phone number, and I'll ring you back in a few days. So I got this young bloke that used to work at the top, this dresser. He was a university graduate, and he was a bright boy. I said, come on, Dirk. I said, come up home, and we'll have a fish tea. And he didn't drink, but he used to smoke. He used to smoke pretty heavy, actually. And between us, we spoke up, you know, that particular night, I guarantee that we could have cooked or cured a couple of pigs with the amount of smoke that went up. And so we sat there and we nutted it out what would have to happen to take on orders to that capacity. Well, it meant spending, from memory, and I think it was something like about $50,000. Also, it meant changing the furnace equipment. It meant spending about $80,000 to $100,000 on conversion furnace, that's electric ones. So I said to him, struck me lucky, Dick. I said, I'd never get my money back in 3 years at that rate. He said, no, you wouldn't. I said, oh, I think we better forget about this. We've got plenty of work, and it's not as though we're looking for this sort of thing. And he said, well, he said, the only one that'd get an advantage of this is the one that takes over if you sell the property. And I said, yeah, that's right, they'd be in Milan front, wouldn't they? He said, they certainly would. So I rang the guy and I scrubbed it. He said, what a pity, Mr. Hickling. He said, because you do a beautiful job. I said, well, would you do it if you were in my position? He said, no. I explained it to him. No, he said. He said, I think that's very good thinking. So the camp ovens didn't go to Japan, but we still carried on making them for the West, and the demand was pretty heavy, pretty heavy. So the camp ovens actually did finish up one of the nicest lines in the factory, which was one that I didn't really want to do. So I was always grateful that I took it home and threw it on the bench in my den, and it made a lot of money for me. Thank you.